Hi there, brothers and sisters of the House of Jacob. Welcome to Brother Hebert Presents. This is part 3 of The Priesthood. This paper is found in the main menu at thinkoutsidethebeast.com. In part 2, we covered 7 points of why I believe Nahor II, Abraham's older brother, was whom Abraham paid tithes to. Point 1 being that Adam was the first of our race with the Spirit, born from above and given dominion over the earth and everything in it. Adam was the first priest in the order of Melchizedek, a preacher of righteousness. Point 2 being that 2 Peter 2:5 reveals that Noah was the 8th preacher of righteousness. Point 3 being that whoever Melchizedek was, he was of the race of Adam. Point 4 being that Nahor II would have been the eldest and righteous patriarch in the line of Adam. Point 5 being that the patriarchal order transitioned to the office of the Levites, which was established at Sinai, and training for the Levites began during the wandering. We saw evidence of this in Hebrews 7:5, Joshua 13:14, Psalm 135:20, and Malachi chapters 2 and 3. Point 6 being that Nahor II was Abraham's older brother, who would have been superior to him by age, rank, and office. And point 7 being the interconnection and fulfillment of the history of the priesthood, the prophecies in Daniel, and the testament of Levi, which we will cover later in this study. We saw the first instance of Melchizedek in Genesis chapter 14, where Abraham paid tithes to him. I believe this was Nahor, Abraham's older brother. It could not have been Noah's son Shem, because Shem would have been over 1,200 years old. The reason that many people believe it was Shem was because of the account in the book of Jasher, but the flaw in Jasher is a result of Jewish tampering of Scripture. The Masoretic texts are a Jewish version of the Old Testament altered by rabbis between the 7th and 10th century AD. It eliminates over 1,300 years out of the original timeline which is found in the Septuagint. This tampering changes the dates and events recorded in Scripture and shows that Christ cannot be the Messiah. The Masoretic texts are corrupt and deceiving, and most Bibles are based on the Masoretic texts, which is why our people don't know what true Christianity is, who we are, who the Jews are, and what the Word of God actually says. It's not what the churches teach or what the Jews say it is. This is why the world has been deceived. We saw that Psalm 110 is a messianic psalm about Christ, and it is an oath made by Yahweh concerning Yeshua Christ and the eternal priesthood of the order of Melchizedek. We learned that Yeshua took over the priesthood forever, because he is eternal, which is why these changes in the office of the priesthood took place. We learned that the priesthood is said to have no father, no mother, no descent, nor beginning of days, nor end of life. This is because there is no recorded, traced genealogy of Melchizedek, which is what the Greek word agenealogatos means. But we have many clues that lead us to the connections of the order of Melchizedek. We know Noah was the 8th preacher of righteousness as attested in 2 Peter 2:5. We can trace back and see that Adam was the first. And we can follow the line from Noah forward and trace each eldest living patriarch from Noah to Nahor II, Abraham's older brother. Let's continue unraveling the mystery of Melchizedek and learn about the priesthood. The racial lineage of Melchizedek is of the race and descendancy of Adam. There were 3 stages of the priesthood. The first stage being the Melchizedek priesthood starting from Adam, the first preacher of righteousness, to Nahor, Abraham's older brother, and possibly culminating with Moses, who it has been said held the staff, which was the scepter of the high priest of Melchizedek. Adam to Moses being a patriarchal leading priesthood. Not every eldest son of all the generations from all Adam's sons, but the eldest son in the specific line descended from Adam's son Seth. Then to Seth's eldest son Enos, his eldest son Canaan, his eldest son Mahalalel, his eldest son Jared. Jared's eldest son Enoch was skipped because Enoch was translated. So Enoch's eldest son Methuselah was next. Then his eldest son Lamech was also skipped because Lamech died before his father Methuselah. Noah resumes the order as the eighth preacher of righteousness.
2 Peter 2:5.
This line went from Noah through his eldest son Shem. Although Shem's oldest son was not Arphaxad, Arphaxad was next in the order because Yahweh's chosen people came through the line of Shem's son Arphaxad. The chosen line overrules the order of the eldest son in a few instances. This was the order from Adam on through the time of Abraham, where his older brother Nahor II would have held the title of Melchizedek in this first order and stage of the Melchizedekian priesthood. I believe it is possible that the order was passed from Nahor II unto Isaac, because Isaac was dedicated to Yahweh on the altar by Abraham. And the children of Israel, the Levitical priesthood, and our Messiah came through Isaac's son Jacob. I then see Jacob as the next in the order, followed by Joseph, because his 10 older brothers disqualified themselves by selling him into bondage. Joseph's dream foretold his brothers making obeisance to him. I then see a brief gap in the order because of the increasing bondage while in Egypt. I see Moses closing out the first order as preacher of righteousness. It is noteworthy that Moses, according to the book of Jasher, was a king between his banishment from Egypt and his time in Midian, where he met his wife Zipporah and her father Reuel, or Jethro, a priest of Midian. Moses was 18 years old when he came to the camp of Kikianus, which at that time was in a war. Moses was with King Kikianus of Cush for 9 years, and became beloved by the men, for he was great and worthy. His stature was like a noble lion, his face like the sun, and his strength was like that of a lion, and he was counselor to the king. When the king died, Moses was exalted by the troops and king's servants, and Moses reigned over the children of Cush. Moses was 27 years old when he began to reign over Cush, and 40 years did he reign. Jasher 73:37.
And Moshe feared Yahweh his Elohim all his life, and Moshe walked before Yahweh in truth with all his heart and soul. He turned not from the right way all the days of his life. He declined not from the way either to the right or to the left, in which Abraham, Yitzchak, and Jacob had walked. And Moshe strengthened himself in the kingdom of the children of Cush, and he guided the children of Cush with his usual wisdom, and Moshe prospered in his kingdom.
Chapter 76, verse 1.
And Moshe, the son of Amram, was still king in the land of Cush in those days, and he prospered in his kingdom, and he conducted the government of the children of Cush in justice, in righteousness, and integrity.
In the 40th year, Moses' queen, Adonijah, whom was given to him by the people, and whom Moses did not consummate with because she was of the daughters of Canaan, stirred up the people against him. So revering Moses and his God Yahweh, they gave him many presents and sent him from them with great honor. After his time as king over the children of Cush, Moses went on to Midian, where he met his future wife and father-in-law. If not Nahor II, then from Moses did the first stage of the patriarchal order of the priesthood of Melchizedek pass to the office of the Levites. Since the people became so numerous, the Levitical priesthood and its ordinances assumed the office, and they became the preachers of righteousness for the nation, performing the sacrifices, oblations, and associated duties. All tithes and offerings were brought to the Levites during this second stage. When Christ died, the Levitical priesthood and ordinances expired, and he became our high priest in the order of Melchizedek, the office of righteousness. What does the phrase, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, mean in Hebrews 7:3? It could merely mean that the day of Melchizedek's birth and death are not recorded. This would be in stark contrast to other famous men of the Bible whose births and deaths are recorded with great accuracy. It would also be in opposition to the importance of one's age under the Levitical and Aaronic priesthood. For under the Levitical priesthood, one had to prove their age so it could be determined whether or not they were too young or too old to serve as priest. The Aaronic priests could not begin to serve as a priest until they were 25 years old and had to retire when they reached the age of 50.
Numbers 4, 1 through 3, 22 through 23, 35, 43, 8, 24 through 25.
What evidence is there that Melchizedek was more than a man? Primary support comes from verses 3, 8, and 15 through 16 of Hebrews chapter 7. Verse 3 says, Melchizedek abides a priest continually. The word abideth in the Greek is in the present tense, indicating continuous action. This being true, it appears that Melchizedek never died, but is still acting as a priest. This is because Christ is our reigning high priest. He will always be our mediator to Yahweh. Not a man, not water or any ritual, and no priest, no middlemen, just you and Christ Yeshua. The priesthood and each of the three orders were held by Adamic men. The patriarchal office from Adam to Nahor II were Adamites. Moses and the Levitical priests were Adamic Israelite men of the tribe of Levi, and Yeshua Messiah was high priest in the flesh just before he was sacrificed. This occurred officially and publicly when Caiaphas put Yeshua under the oath of Leviticus 5:1. Which we will get to later. The order was a continuous ministry of Yahweh's priests. Verse 8 says, of whom Melchizedek it is witnessed that he lives. Notice that is and liveth are also in the present tense. By using the present tense instead of a past tense, the author of Hebrews, Paul, seems to be implying that it was still being witnessed that Melchizedek lives even in his own day. Daniel 4:34, and at the end of the days I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto the sky, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Hebrews 7:25, wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto Elohim by him, seeing he ever lives to make intercession for them. Hebrews 9:17, for a covenant is of force after men are dead, otherwise it is never valid while the covenanted one lives. Melchizedek is not a name, it's a title, an office. It applies to the elder of our race who passes on the righteous words of Yahweh Elohim. The role of Melchizedek lives on in every generation. Finally, in verses 15 through 16 of Hebrews chapter 7, we read that Yeshua was made after the power of an endless life. This statement arose out of the comparison Paul was making between Melchizedek and Yeshua. Keeping with Paul's train of thought, it seems as though he was implying Melchizedek's life was also endless. Again, Melchizedek is not a name. It's a role, a title, an office, a preacher, a shepherd, a watchman. Whether a patriarch, a Levitical priest, or Yeshua Christ, Melchizedek is one who teaches the power of an endless life. All those who were of the patriarchal preachers of righteousness during the first stage, from Adam to Nahor II, indeed will have an endless life. All those of the Levitical priesthood during the second stage who were righteous priests will have an endless life. Yeshua Messiah is eternal and has an endless life. That is why he had to take over the office of the priesthood and void the priesthood of men, all the sacrifices and rituals and ordinances. Those first two stages of the priesthood were inferior to the third stage in which Yeshua's office is eternal. His priesthood has the power of an endless life because he is eternal. It was rightfully and legally acquired by him in the flesh, and his death and resurrection solidified his eternality in the untransferable office as the high priest in the order of Melchizedek. Why was Melchizedek considered great and greater than Abraham at that?
Hebrews 7:7.
To answer this question, we must go back to the first mention of the story in Genesis 14. It is said that Melchizedek came with bread and wine to Abraham after Abraham had defeated Chedorlaomer and the kings who fought with him. These kings looted Sodom and Gomorrah, taking Lot, Abraham's nephew, captive. Therefore, Abraham went to rescue him. When Abraham and his servants returned from the battle, Melchizedek brought food and wine, apparently for the famished soldiers. Abraham then tithed the spoil and gave it to Melchizedek, as was the ancient custom. Upon doing so, Melchizedek blessed Abraham. Dr. McKnight said concerning this blessing, "The blessing here spoken of is not the simple wishing of good to others, which may be done by inferiors to superiors, but is the action of a person authorized to declare God's intention to bestow good upon another." One reason Melchizedek is considered greater than Abraham was because he was authorized by God to declare his intentions of bestowing good upon Abraham. Of course he was. Nahor II, Melchizedek, was the oldest living patriarch descended from the chosen family line of Adam. Abraham was his younger brother. Nahor II, being older than Abraham, would be respected as an elder. We will see more on Nahor II and why he would have been this Melchizedek at that time later in this study. There is no way someone outside the race of Adam would be Melchizedek. Secondly, Melchizedek was greater than Abraham because Melchizedek was the priest of the Most High God.
Hebrews 7:1, 3, 11 through 12, 15, 17, 21.
Abraham was not a priest. He was the friend of God, but not the priest of God. Melchizedek held an office that mediated between God and men. Abraham did not hold an office of this type. Melchizedek is an office without a father and without descent. Paul is using Melchizedek as a model of Christ. It's a role of righteousness. The order of Melchizedek is also without father and without descent because it started with Yeshua, who is the Word, which was from the beginning. Yeshua is Yahweh, and Yahweh is eternal. So the order of Melchizedek never had a beginning or has an end, because Yahweh is the originator of the order, and he was the high priest over Adam, who he sent down to earth to be king of the earth, have dominion, and be king and high priest, and to preach righteousness and pass on the heavenly heritage to his children after him. Finally, why did God need to change the priesthood from Aaronic to Melchizedekian? The answer to this question is supplied by the author of Hebrews, Paul, in 7:11-28. First of all, with the changing of the law of Levitical ordinances comes a changing of the priesthood, Hebrews 7:11-12. Under the law of Moses, God appointed the Levitical Aaronic line to serve as priests. When Yeshua ushered in the renewed covenant, however, he needed to change the priesthood. He didn't change the priesthood, it simply expired. It was of no more use after the sacrifice of Christ. Yeshua assumed the order and the office and became our only high priest forevermore. No more need for a mortal man priest as a mediator. Christ is our mediator to Yahweh now. No more need to bring atoning offerings and bring animals to sacrifice. He desires obedience. He desires you to have knowledge and understanding and live it. He wants you to imitate the role of Melchizedek and practice your priestly duty to witness to others about who they are and whose they are. Secondly, the Aaronic priesthood was weak and unprofitable.
Hebrews 7:18-19.
It made nothing and nobody perfect. Yeshua, on the other hand, could.
Hebrews 7:19-22.
The Aaronic priests could only minister for a short time, but since Yeshua lives and dies no more, he can minister as a priest forever.
Hebrews 7:23-24.
The Aaronic priesthood had to be done away with because of its flaws and shortcomings due to the nature of the men that served in it. The Greek has Hebrews 7:24 as, but Yeshua, because he is to abide for the ages, has the untransferable priesthood. This shows that Yeshua had always had the priesthood from the beginning. It was occupied by the first Adam in the flesh, his children after him, and ultimately restored back to Yeshua, the last Adam. It sounds like an allegory that fits with the parable of Matthew 25:14, for the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. The master represents Yahweh. His servants are Adam and his children after him. They were given dominion and responsibility and knowledge and understanding, a priesthood, and the tools to build the kingdom. Some did their job very well and received their reward, and some did poorly and were punished. Thirdly, but having to do with the reason above, was that the Aaronic priests could not save those who came to them. Yeshua, on the other hand, can save all that come to him, because he lives forevermore to make intercession for them.
Hebrews 7:22-28.
The Torah, the commandments, the sacrifices and atonements, and the priests. None of these can justify or make one perfect or absolved from sin. The atonements made by the priesthood were only a temporary covering over of sin, and only for that year. The Torah, the commandments, the feast days, and the food laws are all still in effect and must be followed, because they keep us walking in the way, healthy and preserved. This life is a test, an ongoing test until we die. The law, the prophets, the apostles, the word, the priests reminded us of the way. When we sin or wander out of the way, we can't bring a goat or a bull to a priest in a temple to atone for our missing the mark of duty anymore. Because the priesthood, the sacrifices and oblations, and ceremonial ordinances were done away with by the death and resurrection of Christ. But we still have to make our own personal sacrifices, which come by repentance, obedience, and allegiance to the way, the commandments, by loving our kinsmen and witnessing to them, by participating in our family heritage, the Sabbaths and feast days, and deepening our understanding of who we are and whose we are.
Are you not called the house of Jacob? Are you not called by my name?
The one we must come to is Yeshua, not men, not any priests, not by rituals, and not by declaring we are saved.
Oh, I'm saved.
Finally, the Levitical order of priests had to be replaced by another order because the former had to offer sacrifices daily for their own sins before they could offer sacrifices for others' sins. Yeshua offered up his own harmless, undefiled, and separated body to God to atone for sin once and for all. He had no need to offer up sacrifices for his own sins, but rather took others' sins upon himself and gave us of his righteousness and eternal life to those who come to God through him.
2 Corinthians 5:21, Hebrews 7:22-28.
The high priest of the priesthood had to first offer a sacrifice for their own sin, then they could offer a sacrifice for the sins of the people. So we can see in chapter 7 of Hebrews that the priesthood went through stages. The eldest living son in the lineage of Adam was high priest until the days of Abraham, proclaiming righteousness and setting an example. Then the Levites were the priesthood for the children of Israel, because when the law was given on Mount Sinai, and when they were disobedient to the law, they required atonement for their sins. This was a shadow of things to come. When Christ died, the priesthood was no longer needed. Christ made the final atonement and assumed the role as high priest forever. The atonements made during the first two stages of the patriarchal priesthood and Levitical priesthood were only temporary. If Yeshua did not give his sinless life for us, we and those who have died would not rise. When Christ died on the stake, he went into the land of the dead, where all those who've died before his death were held captives. He released them from eternal death, which they were prisoners of. No mortal man, priest, or ritual could do that.
It is done.
Now let's cover Haran. Haran was Abraham's older brother. Haran means mountaineer. Haran was the eldest son of Terah and brother of Abraham and Nahor II. and the father of Lot, and Milcah, who married her uncle Nahor the second, and Iscah, or Sarai, who married her uncle Abram, being daughter, or granddaughter, of his father, not of his mother.
Genesis 20, verse 12.
Haran died before his father Terah in Ur of the Chaldees. Haran was a celebrated city of Western Asia where Abram remained after he left Ur of the Chaldees till his father Terah died, when he continued his journey into the land of Canaan. Haran was a major city northeast of Israel in eastern Turkey. The city was called Helenopolis in the early Christian period. There are claims that Haran got its name from Haran, the older brother of Abraham. The city of Haran was believed to have been founded in 2000 BC. The Christian historian Bar Hebraeus in the 13th century mentions that Haran had been built by Canaan, the father of Abraham's ancestor Shelah, in some accounts, and had been named for another son of Canaan called Haran. If this is true, then Haran was built closer to 3000 BC, as Shelah lived from 3031 to 2498 BC. It is also pertinent that in the next generation, Abraham's son Isaac married Nahor's granddaughter, Rebekah, indicating that Nahor II was Abraham's senior by some years. Abraham was 75 years old when he left Haran, the city, according to Genesis 12:4. Terah must have been 130 years old when he fathered Abraham. It is also to be noted that Lot's daughters described their father as being old. We tend to think of Lot as Abraham's young nephew, but Lot never behaves deferentially to Abraham, which indicates that they were of similar age. This again indicates that Haran, the man, was considerably older than Abraham, and is consistent with the hypothesis that Haran was some 60 years older than his younger brother Abraham. Evidently, Haran was much older than Abraham, by about 60 years, and had previously settled the land known as Haran, which was north and between Ur of the Chaldees in the east and the land of Canaan to the west. Genesis 11:31, and Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. After Abraham hacked up the gods and idols of Terah and the people in the temple, they wanted to kill him. He exhorted them to worship the one true God and not the lifeless gods of sticks and stones. Jasher 12:1-44.
And when the king heard the words of Abram, he ordered him to be put into prison, and Abram was 10 days in prison. And at the end of those days the king ordered that all the kings, princes, and governors of different provinces, and the sages, should come before him. And they sat before him, and Abram was still in the house of confinement. And the king said to the princes and sages, Have you heard what Abram, the son of Terah, has done to his father? Thus has he done to him, and I ordered him to be brought before me, and thus has he spoken. His heart did not misgive him, neither did he stir in my presence. And behold, now he is confined in the prison. And therefore, decide what judgment is due to this man who reviled the king, who spoke and did all the things that you have heard. And they all answered the king, saying, "The man who reviled the king should be hanged upon a tree. But having done all the things that he said, and having despised our gods, he must therefore be burned to death, for this is the law in this matter. If it pleases the king to do this, let him order his servants to kindle a fire both night and day in your brick furnace, and then we will cast this man into it." And the king did so, and he commanded his servants that they should prepare a fire for 3 days and three nights in the king's furnace, that is, in Kazdim. And the king ordered them to take Abram from the prison and bring him out to be burned. And all the king's servants, princes, lords, governors, and judges, and all the inhabitants of the land, about 900,000 men, stood opposite the furnace to see Abram. And all the women and little ones crowded upon the roofs and towers to see what was doing with Abram. And they all stood together at a distance. And there was not a man left that did not come on that day to behold the scene. And when Abram was come, the conjurers of the king and the sages saw Abram. And they cried out to the king, saying, "Our sovereign lord, surely this is the man whom we know to have been the child at whose birth the great star swallowed the four stars, which we declared to the king now 50 years since. And behold, now his father has also transgressed your commands and mocked you by bringing you another child, which you did kill." And when the king heard their words, he was exceedingly wroth, and he ordered Terah to be brought before him. And the king said, "Have you heard what the conjurers have spoken? Now tell me truly, how did you? And if you shall speak truth, you shall be acquitted." And seeing that the king's anger was so much kindled, Terah said to the king, "My lord and king, you have heard the truth, and what the sages have spoken is right." And the king said, "How could you do this thing, to transgress my orders, and to give me a child that you did not beget, and to take value for him?" And Terah answered the king, "Because my tender feelings were excited for my son at that time, and I took a son of my handmaid and brought him to the king." And the king said, "Who advised you to do this? Tell me. Do not hide anything from me, and then you shall not die." And Terah was greatly terrified in the king's presence, and he said to the king, "It was Haran, my eldest son, who advised me to do this." And Haran was in those days that Abram was born 32 years old. But Haran did not advise his father to do anything. For Terah said this to the king in order to deliver his own soul from the king, for he feared greatly. And the king said to Terah, "Haran, your son, who advised you to do this, shall die through fire with Abram, for the sentence of death is upon him for having rebelled against the king's desire in doing this thing." And Haran at that time felt inclined to follow the ways of Abram, but he kept it within himself. And Haran said in his heart, "Behold, now the king has seized Abram on account of these things which Abram did. And it shall come to pass that if Abram prevail over the king, I will follow him. But if the king prevail, I will go after the king." And when Terah had spoken this to the king concerning Haran his son, the king ordered Haran to be seized with Abram. And they brought them both, Abram and Haran his brother, to cast them into the fire. And all the inhabitants of the land, and the king's servants and princes, and all the women and little ones were there, standing that day over them. And the king's servants took Abram and his brother, and they stripped them of all their clothes except their lower garments which were upon them. And they bound their hands and feet with linen cords, and the servants of the king lifted them up and cast them both into the furnace. And Yahweh loved Abram, and he had compassion over him. And Yahweh came down and delivered Abram from the fire, and he was not burned. But all the cords with which they bound him were burned, while Abram remained and walked about in the fire. And Haran died when they had cast him into the fire, and he was burned to ashes, for his heart was not perfect with Yahweh. And those men who cast him into the fire, the flame of the fire spread over them, and they were burned, and 12 of them died. And Abram walked in the midst of the fire 3 days and 3 nights, and all the servants of the king saw him walking in the fire, and they came and told the king, saying, "Behold, we have seen Abram walking about in the midst of the fire, and even the lower garments which are upon him are not burned, but the cord with which he was bound is burned." And when the king heard their words, his heart fainted, and he would not believe them. So he sent other faithful princes to see this matter, and they went and saw it, and told it to the king. And the king rose to go and see it. And when he saw Abram walking to and fro in the midst of the fire, and he saw Haran's body burned, and the king wondered greatly. And the king ordered Abram to be taken out from the fire, and his servants approached to take him out, and they could not, for the fire was round about, and the flames ascending toward them from the furnace. And the king's servants fled from it, and the king rebuked them, saying, "Make haste and bring Abram out of the fire, that you shall not die." And the servants of the king again approached to bring Abram out, and the flames came upon them and burned their faces, so that 8 of them died. And when the king saw that his servants could not approach the fire, lest they should be burned, the king called to Abram, "O servant of the Elohim who is in heaven, go forth from amidst the fire, and come here before me." And Abram hearkened to the voice of the king, and he went forth from the fire, and came and stood before the king. And when Abram came out, the king and all his servants saw Abram coming before the king, with his lower garments upon him, for they were not burned, but the cord with which he was bound was burned. And the king said to Abram, "How is it that you was not burned in the fire?" And Abram said to the king, "The Elohim of the sky and the land, in whom I trust, and who has all in his power, he delivered me from the fire into which you did cast me." And Haran, the brother of Abram, was burned to ashes, and they sought for his body, and they found it consumed. And Haran was 82 years old when he died in the fire of Kazdim. And the king, princes, and inhabitants of the land, seeing that Abram was delivered from the fire, they came and bowed down to Abram. And Abram said unto them, "Do not bow down to me, but bow down to the Elohim of the world who had made you, and serve him, and go in his ways, for it is he who delivered me out of this fire, and it is he who creates the souls and spirits of all men, and formed man in his mother's womb, and brought him forth into the world, and it is he who will deliver those who trust in him from all pain." And this thing seemed very wonderful in the eyes of the kings and princes, that Abram was saved from the fire, and that Haran was burned. And the king gave Abram many presents, and he gave him his 2 head servants from the king's house. The name of one was Ani, and the other was Eleazar. And all the king's princes and servants gave Abram many gifts of silver and gold and pearl, and the king and his princes sent him away, and he went in peace. And Abram went forth from the king in peace, and many of the king's servants followed him, and about 300 men joined him. And Abram returned on that day and went to his father's house, he and the men that followed him. And Abram served Yahweh his Elohim all the days of his life, and he walked in his ways and followed his law. And from that day forward, Abram inclined the hearts of the sons of Adam to serve Yahweh. And at that time, Nahor and Abram took unto themselves wives, the daughters of their brother Haran. The wife of Nahor was Milcah, and the name of Abram's wife was Sarai. And Sarai, wife of Abram, was barren. She had no offspring in those days.
Genesis 12:1. Now Yahweh had said unto Abram,
Get you out of your country, and from your kindred, and from your father's house, unto a land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless you, and curse him that curses you. And in you shall all families of the land be blessed.
So Abram departed, as Yahweh had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. After the birth of Isaac, Genesis 21:8, and the child grew, and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the day that Isaac was weaned. Jasher 21:6 6-8,
also Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor his brother, came from Haran, they and all belonging to them, for they greatly rejoiced on hearing that a son had been born to Sarah. And they came to Abraham, and they ate and drank at the feast which Abraham had made upon the day of Isaac's being weaned. And Terah and Nahor rejoiced with Abraham, and they remained with him many days in the land of the Philistines.
Genesis 24:2, And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of the house, that ruled over all that he had, Put, I pray you, your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by Yahweh, the Elohim of the sky, and the Elohim of the land, that you shall not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But you shall go unto my country, and to my kindred, and take a wife unto my son Isaac. And the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swear to him concerning that matter. And the servant took 10 camels of the camels of his master, and departed, for all the goods of his master were in his hand. And he arose, and went to Mesopotamia, unto the city of Nahor. The city of Nahor. The city of Nahor may be referring to the city of Haran. When Abraham sent out his servant to find his kin, he sent him to Aram Naharaim, translated by the King James Perversion and other Bibles as Mesopotamia. Later, in Genesis, this kingdom will be revealed to be close to, or containing, the city of Haran, where Terah settled his family en route to Canaan. Padan Aram, first mentioned in Genesis 25, may be an alternate or more specific name for the region. Although the city of Nahor is in Aram Naharaim at the start of this story, Genesis 11 does not record him traveling with his father and siblings. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. When they came to Haran, they settled there.
Genesis 11:31.
Terah took his son Abram, his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his grandson Lot. Why not Nahor II? By Genesis 24, Nahor II is so at home in Aram that a town bears his name. Although Abraham and Nahor II took different paths, they both appear to be prominent in their communities. Like Abraham, Nahor II was probably rich. He may have founded the town that he lived in, and his granddaughter Rebekah was well stocked with nurses and attendants. Nahor was the progenitor of 12 tribes through his 11 sons and one daughter. 8 were children of Milcah, and 4 were children of Reumah.
Genesis 22:20-24.
Even if he wasn't prominent in the text, Nahor was a prominent man in his community. It is said that Nahor's sons were Aramean tribes, but they only lived in the land of Aram, Shem's son. Nahor was a Hebrew, so his children were also Hebrews, Genesis 22:20. And it came to pass after these things, offering up of Isaac, that it was told Abraham, saying, Behold, Milcah, she has also borne children unto your brother Nahor. Whose, his firstborn, and Booz, his brother, and Kemuel, the father of Aram, the younger, and Kesed, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlap, and Bethuel. And Bethuel begat Rebekah, Isaac's wife. These 8 Milcah did bear to Nahor, Abraham's brother, and his concubine, whose name was Reumah, she bare also Tebah, and Gahem, and Thahash, and Maacah. The Maacathites dwelt among the Israelites, as attested in Joshua 13:13. I believe Abraham's older brother Nahor II was the high priest in the order of Melchizedek, that it was Nahor whom Abraham paid tithes to. I believe it was Nahor because this patriarchal order began with Adam and continued in the family and would not include anyone outside our race or outside of this chosen line of patriarchs. Abraham's great-great-grandfather, Reu, was the last high priest of the order before Nahor II, in which the order skipped 3 generations because Serug, Nahor I, and Terah were idolaters. So if the patriarchal order is as I've traced, it stands to reason that Nahor II, being the older brother of Abraham, would assume the order and be the high priest in the patriarchal order. It didn't go to Abraham because Abraham paid tithes to Nahor II, and Nahor II witnessed the birth of Isaac and blessed him, and must have known that Yahweh had chosen Abraham to continue the chosen line, especially after he saw that Sarah and Abraham gave birth to Isaac in their old age. Truly a miracle. Was Nahor's god Yahweh too? How could Nahor II be in the line of the patriarchal office of Melchizedek if he were not a Yahweh worshiper? Genesis 31:53. The God of Abram and the God of Nahor judge between us, and Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. This was when Jacob and his uncle Laban were disputing about the decision to leave and return to the land of his kindred. Laban was also an idolater. Joshua 24:2, and Joshua said unto all the people,
Thus says Yahweh Elohim of Yisrael, Your forefathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time, even Terah, the father of Abraham, and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods.
Terah served other gods. Abraham and Nahor too were sons of Terah. The they that served other gods were Serug, his son Nahor I the elder, and his son Terah, Nimrod, and those ancestors of theirs that dwelt beyond where the flood occurred. The flood was not worldwide. It was in the Tarim Basin. So yes, we see that Nahor II was a Yahweh worshiper, and he must have been the king of Salem and a preacher of righteousness. The Adamic race is God's children in the earth. Yahweh's chosen line goes from Adam to Noah, Noah's son Shem to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then Yahweh's chosen line goes through Jacob and his children. Levi was Jacob's third son, and to whom the office of the priesthood was transferred to. This was because Nahor II was not an Israelite. He was an Adamic, Shemite, Hebrew, as was Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. This is where the transition from the first patriarchal stage of the order of Melchizedek went to the second stage, the office of the Levites. Nahor's children were not chosen by Yahweh to assume the office of the priesthood and order of Melchizedek. Abraham's seed was chosen through Isaac and Jacob, and Jacob's son Levi, and to Moses and Aaron. They were ordained by Yahweh to carry the torch and assume the management of the Israelite family. For 1600 years, until the time of Christ, in which his sacrifice ended all sacrifices, and he became our high priest, ending all priesthoods. Yeshua is our high priest after the order of Melchizedek.
Jesus Christ, the sacrifice.